Starship Rokon Show with Anna DeBlantis on an alternative fact Thursday.
What do you mean alternative fact?
Because we're going to pretend it's Friday.
Oh, okay.
That's what we're going to do.
Because feels like a Friday.
It does feel like a Friday. Well, it should. We're going to roll out a Carnival wagon. We're going to have live music Friday on Thursday. Because right. Tomorrow we get off, the show ends early because the our beloved Blackhawks, although I would like to have a word or two with them.
Yeah.
They've got to really put it together now. They are in, Buffalo. And Buffalo's not it's hard enough to be in Buffalo under any good circumstance. Although it's beautiful country up there. It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
It's the city that's a little, you know what it is.
I don't know. I don't know much about Buffalo at all.
Yeah, exactly.
I just know that Patrick Kane is from there and they mm-hmm. invented chicken wings. That's
okay.
all I know.
That's enough. Now I like Buffalo.
Yeah. That's true.
And they lost 4 Super Bowls in a row.
That's true. But I do.
That's right, all I know about
right
Buffalo.
Now, see how the AFC kind of turns itself around after that?
Right.
That's Marv Levy, by the way. Great Chicagoan.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't want anything bad to be said about that team after everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's horrible, though.
And Chef Edward Kim from Mott Street.
Nice.
Is going to be here for the Carnival wagon.
Ooh.
He is one of the best in the world,
yes.
Let alone Chicago.
Heard great things about the Mott Street.
Yep. And so we got a lot going on.
And then what I like about the temperatures, we're kind of working our way slowly to zero. It's kind of nice. -3 below, I heard Kim say. And yep. I think during this show, we may or may not hit zero. We might even get in positive territory. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be nice to get
real temperature.
That would be nice to get above the. Although, I don't know. I'm running around pretty crazy today. I did a Dane Placco over
mm-hmm.
at the Fox.
Mm-hmm.
He asked me to step outside with him, not like in a fight.
Okay, I can't imagine Dane. Yeah, getting in a fight with someone.
So we did an interview. I did a TV interview with them about how tough Chicagoans are, and we proved it by me sitting in a suit coat. Like mm-hmm. I was wearing a suit,
mm-hmm.
and he was just wearing his shirt, and we stood outside and talked for 10 minutes.
You?
Yeah.
A tough Chicagoan?
Yeah.
Were you wearing your fingerless gloves?
I wasn't. It was just me in a suit and tie. You know, like a suit coat and tie.
Yeah.
4 degrees below zero.
To see how long you would last.
No, we just did it. We just talked about how tough we are. Because apparently last night, Colbert talked about how tough Chicago is because they showed the train tracks on fire,
right.
and the smoke coming off the lake.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, how crazy
we
were talking about that yesterday. That sort of steam fog that was being there was a strange fog over the lake. It looked all white and then gray right above it. We could see it from here.
And right now, there's just one vent of that fog coming up off the mm-hmm. lake, and I'm not sure what the hell it is.
I'd say we're pretty tough. I've also been so impressed with like how warm people's hearts have been during this stretch of cold weather. You've seen people going door to door on perfect strangers to see if they were okay. You've seen people opening their businesses, offering them as makeshift warming centers. You saw that anonymous donor give 70 homeless people hotel rooms for the night to help them get through the night. I mean, you've seen food, you know, donations and all kinds of things pouring out to people who really have needed it over these last couple of days. And that is heartening, I think.
Just today, people were handing out bottles of water to people who lost their water because of the water main breaks.
Oh, see?
So nice.
See?
Love it.
Oh, and the water, it's there. It was a near crisis situation, people.
Mm-hmm.
I lost internet last night.
Oh, jeez. How'd you get through?
I don't know.
You were barely home last night, from what I understand.
Grow strong. Just remember.
Yeah. All right.
But you made it.
No, that's
true.
You made it. I was barely home last night. Well, we went out and celebrated with John Alfirovich
right.
from Apple Chevrolet.
It was
for
a big night.
The Time Dealer of the Year Award, which out of 16,000 auto dealers, he won it. And so
cool.
We decided we went out. Kay Powell was with us for a little bit of that, mm-hmm. as you'll recall. How are you feeling?
Oh, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like everyone I know was drunk last night. Everyone's off of work. They're like, let's go. Let's do this. Everyone's like, let's get through this together with a bottle of whiskey.
Right. And it was we drank a bottle of whiskey at one bar. And then one of our other friends and I ended up, we thought, you know what we should do?
Yeah.
We should have dinner.
And have some more.
Let's go have. You know what? This is bad on an empty stomach. So we went to dinner, to a place that was, and you know, there were very few restaurants open last night. People were freaked, and a bunch of places were closed. So we found an open restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, little buddy, let's go. We actually went to a couple places that were closed. So we ended up at this
strange,
one place.
Isn't it?
And right on the river where there was it was awfully windy and cold. And,
and are you
crazy.
Walking around trying to find a place?
Well,
I picture that,
we
actually.
Had, no, yeah,
you.
Actually, there was...
No, not here either.
Yeah, that, okay. I will admit that there was some meandering. we were on foot meandering a little bit. Hey, little buddy, let's not go swimming, okay? And then we were able to.
And the other
Uber
friend
home.
You're referring to just shows up in a hoodie, and the rest of us
what?
Have like vests, everything, like every layer. He's like, "What's with the coats, you wusses?" I'm like, "All right, forget the coats."
Yeah. And then he lost half his clothes.
A hoodie.
Time. Yeah.
It was.
I don't want to talk. Listen, this was a near crisis situation, people, and we chose as tough Chicagoans, and you're saying I'm not tough. Chicagoans to brave this with a bottle of bourbon and a spirit of ingenuity.
Grow strong.
Yeah.
Bourbon cures all.
Well, it certainly did make decision-making easier for us.
Then you got home, you got no internet. And then...
Right.
Yeah. You had to power through that, too.
Well, I mean, you know, when you get home in a situation like that...
You immediately need to check...
You need internet.
The news?
You know what I mean? I mean, you've been out, like, you know, out and there's been some drinking and there's been some, you know, you get home and you... You know, I want to check my Uber balance and everything. I don't know. Right, and the next, you know, I've got, like, no internet.
Surge pricing, you know.
Yeah. And I'm trying to fix the internet. I'm down at, you know, I'm with with all the wires there in the back of the... That wasn't really good.
Trying to read the crazy code on the back of the box.
Right, and the thing kept running away from me. I thought it's bad. All right. Anyway,
what a night!
It's quite a night.
You made it.
Let's. You know, AB Stoddard is going to join us here in just a moment. We need to talk to her, but first, let's find out from Kim Gordon what's happening on the WGN newsroom side, which she'll have the full broadcast at 3:30.
Do you still have confidence in Gina Haspel and Dan Coats to give you good advice?
No, I disagree with certain things that they said. I think I'm right, but time will prove that. Time will prove me right, probably.
I don't know.
Such a surprising comment.
Yeah, is that possible that time will prove you right, probably? I mean, doesn't that seem like I think we missed something there, A.B. Stoddard. What do you make of that?
You always start with a good laugh. You always make me laugh. When it comes to our spiraling debt and deficits, the trade deals are going to come through apparently, which is going to balance the books. A lot of interesting stuff from today's comments.
Yeah, I don't know if he misrepresented or misunderstood the money that is coming in, but he goes, you know, we're making a lot of money on these tariffs, and I'm like, no. You're really not actually.
That's an old Trumpism, and it comes out a lot. One of my other favorites is the "We have a wall, don't worry about it," and then a couple of tweets later, "We desperately need a wall."
Well,
and
okay,
we might have had two of those today.
Let's talk about this. He actually is changing his narrative. And quite honestly, I think it's genius. This is the Larry David principle that he is using. When Larry David, the great comedian, Curb Your Enthusiasm and all that, comedian and writer, he worked at Saturday Night Live. That's one of his first jobs when he was an up-and-comer. And he went in one day to Lorne Michaels and he quit. And they went home, stomped home, and then he sat in his house and he thought, wow, that was a bad move. And he wanted to get his job back, so he just showed up for work the next day and pretended that he didn't quit. And then they walked him out of 30 Rockefeller Center to say, hey, you know what? You did quit. You're out. It worked out for him in the long run. But Donald
Certainly
Trump
did.
Is doing that right now. It's the full Larry David. He is saying that the wall's being built. So no matter what happens here at the end, when he has to give up at the end and not get a full wall but get a barrier or jersey barrier or whatever the hell they're calling this thing, he's going to get some barrier, but, you know, much more electronic and all the rest of it. He's going to say, well, I already started building the wall. What he will fail to mention is that this is Obama wall that they are building or that they are fixing right now.
Yeah, or rehabbing. Exactly. Yeah. But it will be a virtual reality tour. You're right. He'll say, this is what I did, and it's a promise kept, and he'll just make his own reality. It's what he does. It's he does it with intelligence information. It's not a problem. He just creates what he needs.
You saw Speaker Pelosi appeared, I don't know, to extend some, it was an olive branch, I don't know what to call it. She said today that there will be no wall money, but if we have suggestions about areas that need some infrastructure, then we'll talk about it. And it felt to me as if this shows how much this is a battle over semantics and not right. necessarily solutions.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what the Republicans are hoping for, is that there'll be some kind of semantic harmonizing conclusion that allows him a climb down. And there's certainly going to be, after consulting with Department of Homeland Security officials and experts, there's going to be this array of new goodies in terms of more detention spaces, more judges, improvements at these ports of entries and these facilities, more sensing detection, technological resources for detection and all this type of stuff. So that they're going to have a big package that they'll be talking about with lots of official terms, but there will be physical fencing and structures in different places, but it won't. He's not going to have a contiguous wall, and Democrats won't use the word wall, and then he'll, tell us it's a wall.
Right. He'll say, I got what I wanted. We got the wall. Don't worry about it. And he'll say it. And the question is, will the people have already broken bad on him on the right, the press and pundits who are super conservative, who've already said, like the Ann Coulters of the world, will they call him out on it and go, all right, fine, better than the alternative? I mean, it really is going to be, kind of a race to the bottom there. Hey, I want to go back to the security thing for a second here, because this really is alarming to me. Dan Coats, who we've known for very long, he's next door neighbor, essentially, in terms of a senator, and spent a lot of time in Chicago, went to college at Wheaton. He's a very a beloved figure in Indiana politics, and I think and a big Cubs fan. So that's why I love him. But he's a really respected guy, and...
No question. We're lucky to have him.
Right. I mean, we're very lucky to have him. I think, by the way, he's the guy who wrote that letter. Remember that letter that was written about
letter.
It? Don't worry about it. We got this.
From the inside, we're working.
Anonymous.
We're on the good side, the good team.
I think ultimately, at the end of the day, he is part of that that sort of inside group that, is trying to keep this thing on track. John Kelly and him, and I think to some degree Mike Pence. Although Mike Pence does his best elf on the shelf when you see him publicly, I think behind the scenes he's trying to work a little. But I just don't know if he's going to stick around for this. Because I think that Trump's going to fire him now.
It really is terrifying. Apparently, Trump was angered by his interview with Andrea Mitchell at the Aspen Institute, whatever it was, the conference. Remember that moment where she said, "We just got word that the president has invited President Putin to Washington," and he was like, "Oh, I didn't know about that. That's going to be interesting." And so, then there was this discussion of whether or not he would get fired, and then that went away. But the idea that Dan Coats, he did speak to Gina Haspel, also the CIA director. He watched their hearing on TV and was very upset about everyone's conclusions and the data they used to back it up. And basically, he did speak to several of them. But I think I'm with you. I worry the most about Dan Coats, and I just feel so grateful that Dan Coats has stuck around this long. But those tweets yesterday, I just thought were so alarming, that just the idea that, our allies would be watching that and panicking, that our adversaries, would be celebrating. I know he's picked on the intelligence community before, but something about yesterday was so next level horrible. I'm like I said, I'm just glad that Danco's is still there, and I hope it can last.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I think there's a lot of people in the, you know, old school Republicans who are watching this with horror, but they don't want to say anything to the crazy younger and older people around them right now, which is it seems to be the polar extremes of his support.
Interesting though, and surprised me is that Senator Thune, who's now the Republican whip under McConnell, second leader in the Senate, he, you know, rebuked Trump for picking on his IC people in those tweets. And then, you know, today they passed a resolution about the Middle East in defiance of President Trump. So something, I mean, I know the shutdown really exasperated these people, these senators who have literally gone along and along and along no matter what. They got alarmed about the murder of James Khashoggi, but then they didn't really follow through. And I was just very interested to see, that they did push back on the insults to the intelligence community and those officials. And then also that they would, you know, slap this resolution on the floor, basically saying that the president is wrong.
Yep.
In Syria and Afghanistan.
Good news. All right, AB, thank you.
Thanks,
appreciate
AB.
It. AB Stoddard.
Thanks for having me.
You can read her in Real Clear Politics. She's an associate editor there and very, very, very great writer.
She is.
Concho with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, this is a big story today in the mayor's race. That Susana Mendoza got a pretty big endorsement.
Sure.
In the sense that Laura Ricketts, co-owner of the Chicago Cubs, is now the co-chairperson of Susana Mendoza's election campaign. How about that? And Laura joins us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline, and you actually qualify for that. So congratulations, Laura, on that.
Thank you. That's kind of you.
Yeah, so thank you very much. All right.
Thank you.
So how did you come to this?
Oh, well, I've known Susana for a long time, she has a great record of public service to citizens of Illinois and Chicago, and I decided to finally endorse her because I'm just really impressed currently by her really strong ethics plan. You know, she released it earlier this week, and she consulted with Dan Webb, a legendary corruption fighter and a prominent lawyer, to create, you know, her proposal for an anti-corruption and accountability and ethics commission. And she said she would create that on her first day as mayor. And it's a pretty comprehensive plan. I think it's the most comprehensive of any of the other viable candidates out there. She said she would end aldermanic prerogatives, which I'm very much in favor of. And she also said that she would expand and strengthen the Inspector General's oversight of City Council, among other things. So I just think we have an opportunity right now for new leadership in the city with the elections coming up that happen to coincide with all of these really disappointing news out of the City Council. And that just continues to grow and become more disappointing. And I just think we have an opportunity to change the way the city does business. And so far, from what I've seen, Susana really has the most comprehensive proposal of any of the mayoral candidates.
Laura, what do you say then though, to people? I agree with you. I mean, ethics reform is front and center in this mayor's race, and we need substantial plans to improve what we've seen. This is not good enough. But I just think there are some who will say, well, what do you say to those who say, well, among her political mentors are some of the people who are at the very center of these this ethics investigation, Alderman Solis, Alderman Burke, and Mike Madigan, three of her political mentors. Not that she's done anything wrong, but that some might say, well, that's the system she has come from. Is that possible to ever sever the ties and become a true reformer?
I believe so. I think that, Susana, as I mentioned before, she's been in elective office in the state and the city for 20 years, I think, as a first as a state legislator and a city official. Now statewide as comptroller, which I've been very impressed by her job there. And I think, really, to be effective in politics and government, in this environment, you have to know and work with these people. But I have to tell you, I really have confidence in Susanna's integrity. And so people you refer to, like Alderman Burke and Alderman Solis and others, they really have to be accountable for their own behavior. But I have no doubt in Susanna's integrity. And as I said, I'm impressed with the bold proposal that she's put forward, and they're the kind of things that our city needs right now.
Hey, let me ask you, you know, you mentioned aldermanic, the prerogative issue, which is really amazing. And when people find out what that really means, I think it's always surprising mm-hmm. that basically aldermen are mini mayors in their wards, and they are the purveyors of all pleasure and pain. They get to make decisions about, you know, to businesses, specifically to business owners or people who want to develop real estate or land, you know, or landlords, and even to some degree of homeowners who want to make changes in their home. I mean, it becomes a real tussle if an alderman doesn't like you or you haven't gotten on that alderman's good side for whatever reason. And I gotta say, I mean, one of the grandest battles of our most recent Chicago history has been between the alderman for Wrigley Field and you guys and the Ricketts family, right? I mean,
well, I don't know if it's been one of the grandest battles, but yeah, it's been a secret that we've had our differences of opinion, and you know, the way and I would say my experience throughout all of that and definitely influences the way I feel about the city council races that are coming up and about the mayoral race. You know, as the saying goes, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And when you give aldermen the absolute and sole power to decide on a $1 billion project, let alone apparently a driveway for their business, there's really room for abuse. And what we need in this city, what is really obvious good government, a simple principle of, you know, that project should be based on citywide zoning rules that have transparency and consistency and fairness, and that are consistent throughout the whole city. So, yeah, we've definitely had our run-ins with the aldermen, and it's really no secret that instead of collaborating with us with what we were trying to do, preserve Wrigley Field and clean up, the area around Wrigley Field and make it more useful for the Wrigleyville community and provide amenities that really didn't exist there before. Instead of collaborating with us, he devoted, much of his time to really protecting those who opposed our investments in the neighborhood. And he didn't even acknowledge that he thought it was his job to advocate for rooftop business owners and a few bar owners who are his campaign donors. So, in the meantime, we ended up putting a thousand union men and women to work to preserve Wrigley Field and develop the hotel and the plaza. That's probably above $4 million in wages. We've spent millions with local contractors and businesses. We're one of the biggest taxpayers in the city.
Well, right.
We contribute millions a year to charitable organizations in our city parks, our public schools, our public libraries, and the aldermen, because we oppose them, you know, insults us on the floor of city council and, threatens retribution for opposing them. And that's just not the way a city that works, that really works, should work.
I agree with you, because it's kind of ridiculous. And what you guys did in Wrigleyville with the redo of not only the stadium itself, but that area around is, and my whole life I've been going to that stadium, and mm-hmm. you know, it was especially in off like out of season moments up in, you know, around that, you know, in the 70s and 80s, that was a no man's land up there. It was scary.
Yeah.
You know, when it, you know, like in December and January and February, you know, it was not the kind of place that people wanted to go. And now it's become a destination over these last number of years. But you classed up the joint. There are no two ways around it. And to me, it's one of those things. I do think that's one of the highlights or lowlights, I suppose, of you know, aldermanic prerogative and, you know, a fight between people who are actually trying to do something to improve the city in a big and a grand way, I mean, people are not going to stop going to Wrigley Field, right? And if you want to make it nicer and you want to build a hotel and you want to do all those kinds of things, I mean, it just made no sense. Anyway, well, I appreciate everything that you guys have done for the city, because I know, you know, the Ricketts family, originally not from Chicago, but obviously adopted Chicago. You and your brothers, you know, have, you know, made a home and business and all that stuff here and made the city better for it. And it does take new eyes on a situation, because, you know, your family's originally from Omaha, and Omaha has its own issues, but not like this. Not like this.
Yeah, I think we're unique. I mean, a lot of cities experience corruption, but Chicago, unfortunately, seems to be, at the top for the worst.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. I appreciate your comments about what we've been able to do in Wrigleyville for the ballpark and in that block around it. And it has been for Cubs fans, but also for the neighborhood itself. Sure. We've been trying to be really, really mindful of the neighbors. And in fact, that's one of the three, really pillars of our mission at the Cubs. That it's not just about putting a good team on the field that can win the World Series. It's not just about improving and preserving Wrigley Field. It's about being a good neighbor. This is our family's legacy. We love this city, and we love Wrigleyville. And so we really have tried to do our best to respect the local neighborhood and also to provide amenities for them, too, and improve it and make it a better place.
All right, Laura Ricketts. Laura Ricketts, thank you very much. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Laura.
Thanks for being with us. All right.
Thank you. Stay warm.
Yeah, we will. It's getting to zero now. We're fine.
Yeah,
don't worry
about
it.
It's almost zero.
Yeah,
call me. Not to worry.
Exactly. I've just put on suntan lotion. All right. Thank you very much, Laura Ricketts. Let's check in now with Kim Gordon. She's got the WGN news at the top of the hour. What's coming up? That music means only one thing.
The official congressman.
The official congressman. We have our own district, the district of Roe and Anna, and it's Congressman Adam Kinzinger. He represents only. He's got the smallest district in the entire Congress. It's just the two of us.
It's like a state of mind. It's more of a state of mind than a district.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know. I think I do. Then that's unfortunate. Kim Gordon's news is coming out for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, by the way, after we talk to the congressman. All right, I got to ask you a couple serious questions here. First of all, the president goes after the intelligence community, like writ large. Like you had the top intelligence folks sitting there, you know, up on Capitol Hill. And with those big desks that's got the draping over it, and they sit there and they're being asked questions by elected officials, and they're answering them because that is their job. They have to do that, and they are expressing what their best understanding and knowledge of the situation in Iran, in North Korea, and in Afghanistan, and all the rest, and the fight against ISIS, and it is not necessarily the same narrative that the president has been sharing with us, and he gets mad about it. How do you, as a Republican, reconcile that?
Yeah, I think the president is okay to make his statements about, you know, hey, Iran is actually, we're doing damage to them, et cetera, et cetera. I don't understand this. And, you know, it's a couple of things. I don't know what he gains by attacking the intelligence service on Twitter. And it's not like they were attacking him. They were just giving, I think, pretty sober assessments of the world as it is. It's a pretty dangerous world out there. And so I don't know what he gains by doing it. I mean, maybe there are some people that will take his word over the intelligence service and they'll be a little less embarrassed. But the other thing is, and here's where my real concern is, at where that does damage, is there's going to be probably in the president's next year, there is going to be some national security crisis where the president is going to need to address the American people and use what the intelligence community is saying as an impetus for maybe it's military action, maybe it's humanitarian relief, you know, anything
something
like that. And something. And when you're undermining your own intelligence, then how do you expect the American people to believe when you're using intelligence, you know, as the impetus for action? And so, yeah, I don't understand it. Again, I think, you know, he was fine to say his opinion on everything. Of course, he's president. He has a right to do these things. I just don't, I don't even see the benefit. I think it's wrong. And I don't see the benefit of every little spat or disagreement being on Twitter for everybody to see. You know, when it comes to things like national security, those are like disagreements that, to the extent possible, we keep in-house, I think.
What do you think about the prospect within the next 2 weeks of getting a budget deal done, you know, for that part of the government that got shut down, and whether there's going to be a wall, a barrier,
infrastructure.
Infrastructure. That's what they call it. That's what
Speaker
Democrats
Pelosi
called it today.
Said, we're willing to talk about infrastructure, but no wall money. No wall money.
We're just talking. It's just totally semantics, is
totally.
It not?
It's 1,000% semantics. And here's what I like. Like, this is a tier two issue, I think, in terms of, you know, what's important in this country. I want to build a wall. Let me be clear. I want to build barriers, borders, anything, because I think it's important. But I think in the grand scheme of these massive kind of existential threats that exist out there, but we are acting like this is the main thing, and now we're down to semantics. It's stupid. I actually, though, I'm optimistic that something gets done. I think what we went through, as I said from the beginning, government shutdowns don't work. They're dumb. And even if one side, like, wins, you know, if one side says, oh, we came out, it's like basically being saying that, you know, you got beat up less, but everybody looks bad in the end. So I think we end up coming with some kind of a deal. I don't know what it looks like. Who knows? And I think it's going to end up being bigger than just immigration. I think they're going to add probably budget caps, maybe debt limits, stuff like that in there. It's going to be one big, giant, you know, whatever sandwich.
Hey, this is just breaking right now. The president just tweeted that he's on the same page with his intelligence community. He just did. He did. We had a good meeting. We're on the same page. It was totally misrepresented what I said. Is that what you said? It's what you tweeted. I love when he does that. He acts like we're misreporting what he tweeted.
He said it.
Yes.
I don't understand it. Let me pull the curtain back for a second and say something interesting that most people don't hear. I've met with the president now a number of times on Syria and Afghanistan. He and I actually get along. And what people don't realize, the public Donald Trump with Twitter and everything is one way. And I'm being honest. People are going to be shocked when I say this. He's very introspective and actually very spun up on these issues on foreign policy when you're meeting with him in the office. But there's an entertainment side to him, or that kind of performance side, which comes out on Twitter, which, you know, he ends up having to put a tweet out that says he agrees with his intel. I'm glad he did. Good.
Let me tell you something. If I wanted an entertainer as my president, I would have voted for Jerry Seinfeld. What I have here now is a guy that if he acted presidential, his approval rating, if he just acted like you're describing him, if he behaved publicly like that and wasn't afraid that numbnuts weren't going to vote for him if he did, his approval ratings would go up by 20%. I'm telling you that right now.
Too.
All right. Congressman, thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir.
Thanks, Congressman.
Yeah, good talk. See you guys.
Yeah, good talk. We have to just talk to him 5 minutes every couple of days just to make ourselves feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want to think about summertime quite yet because it breaks my little heart, but Tom Skilling is here to soothe my pain, at least for a short period of time, and Mr. Skilling, let me ask you this question.
Sure.
First of all, when you said there's no wind chill, is there really no wind chill right now? Is there no wind?
No, there's no wind.
What?
No wind officially at O'Hare Field. Now, I encountered the breezes out here in the parking lot on the northwest side, but apparently the wind is quite calm. It's calm at O'Hare, it's calm in Aurora, and we've got a 3-mile-per-hour wind at Northerly Island right now, so...
What is that telling us?
It tells us that we're in this transition period to milder air. It's going to be a slow one, but it's going to be a significant one before it's all over. We could go from this morning's 21 below, and by the way, it hit as cold as 33 below this morning out in Sugar Grove, 31 below in Rochelle. There was a co-op.
By the way, that Sugar Grove thermometer has been broken for 50 years, so let's not go with that as the official. But
it's not broken. It sits in a valley out there. I used to fly when I was in high school. I was taking some flying lessons out of the airport there. It's a nice airport. But they sit low out there. So what happens is the cold air sits down there like milk in the bottom of a bowl because of its density, and they tend to get colder temperatures.
Oh, yeah, cold. That whole thing is screwy over there.
You know what's interesting? Mount Carroll, there's a cooperative observer that's out by the Mississippi River between Dubuque and the Quad Cities, had an unofficial low this morning of 38 below.
Wow.
If that comes anywhere near verifying, that would be the coldest low temperature ever recorded in the state of Illinois.
Did we set any records here, Tom?
No.
During this stretch?
We broke the records here for overnight for the preceding low night before last. And, you know, my colleague Mark Carroll did a calculation. Turns out this last week of January will go down in the books as the coldest final week of January in 148 years of weather records.
Well, I think we knew that.
Yeah. And not a surprise there, right?
Yeah.
It has averaged 7.2 below, and the next closest to that was 1936, which averaged 4.7 below. So, hey, there's something to tell, the grandkids and
all the rest. I survived it.
I remember.
Back in my day.
When I was young,
cold.
I lived through this, you know.
And are we done with the frost quakes and those types of
things? Yeah, I would think so.
Actually, this is the part where it gets really kind of iffy, because when it starts to thaw, the ice melts, and then the cracks that have been created in pipes or whatever become evident.
And not only that, we're going to have a flood of Gulf moisture come up. Tomorrow will turn partly sunny. It'll be kind of a nice day, and it'll feel tropical compared to what we've been through with a high around 21. But then the Gulf moisture floods up late tomorrow night, and that's going to bring low clouds, freezing drizzle, and fog into the area that will last into Saturday morning. That could be really dicey if that works out the wrong way, and it may. But it looks like...
What do you mean?
In other words, visibilities will go down, and if you drizzle into an area that's had this barbaric cold for 3 days, the ground is... where it's exposed, and so are the roads, cold and below freezing. So you're going to get some icing to occur. And this would be late tomorrow night and into Saturday morning. We think by afternoon Saturday we'll break above freezing and then get up to the low 40s on Sunday, when it'll be breezy and there may be some morning drizzle. And then rain with a spike up to around 52 the middle of the day Monday, and then some colder air starts dumping back in again, but it's a moderate brand of cold.
Mm-hmm.
Still, a second storm that comes in Tuesday night, Wednesday, will have to be watched. That could be a wintry mix or some snow. And then another chunk of fairly cold air in later next week, and then we go into a more moderate brand of cold, and more seasonable, like upper 20s to low 30s as we get into not this weekend, but next weekend. This weekend, by the way, mm-hmm. will average about 22.5 degrees warmer than last weekend. So we're really going to notice in coming days some substantial temperature improvement. It won't be as fast as most of us would like, but it certainly will be better feeling than what we've just come through.
And Super Bowl Sunday, people will want to get out of the house, I would imagine, after a couple days being shut in.
Isn't that the truth? That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All right.
Do you feel better
now,
Rome?
No. Because here's why. Because now you're like all kinds of, it can be real wet and kind of scary. Now, next week, first of all, before we get to that, you're talking about snow tonight, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, how much snow are we getting?
About 1 to 3 inches. It'll be heavier as you trend south, but about 1 to 3 inches, about 6 to 8 hours of snow. It's to commence rather imminently, and snow through, say, midnight to 2 a.m., start tapering off then. And there's a winter weather advisory out for our southern and far western counties. This would include Kankakee, Grundy, Kendall, Kane, DeKalb, and areas out toward Ogle and Lee counties out to the west. So
my Traverse cannot catch a break here. It just can't. I keep trying to get it cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
oh, yeah.
It has a 1 month's worth of salt and snow and debris on it.
What is this?
My car.
Oh, yeah. Your car.
The cars are not doing well right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, the nice thing is you can remove your bumper, grind it up, and you have essentially salt for your deck. You know, you can put it on.
How about that,
up there.
That's right.
Bring that in to the Apple Chevrolet and say.
I took the Traverse out. I actually shook it over my deck like a salt
sure,
shaker.
Sure.
That's how it worked. By the way, I should mention this. Permaseal Basement Systems bringing you Tom Skilling's weather. And you're going to need them. I hope not, but you might need them.
Well, I'll tell you, our river systems, too, you pointed out, we start breaking the ice up, then, you know, we already have some ice flow issues on some rivers. So that's kind of worrisome. And then we put a little rain on top of that Sunday night, Monday.
Yeah.
The stuff coming in late tomorrow night and Saturday be fairly light. But it looks really ugly. You know, low clouds, haze, fog, as this warmer air runs up over the snowpack.
Give me something good. I know it's going to be 52 on Monday, right?
Yeah.
You still calling for that?
Yes.
And 52 on Monday with what? With rain?
Yes, there'll be rain. Might even be an isolated thunderstorm. A cold front passes about the middle of the day. And but, you know, here's what's interesting about that. We will have warmed 73 degrees from this morning's low to that 52. And we ran that. Had Rich Koneman, one of our climate folks and keeper of the climate records here. We have a number of those in this office, and we're happy to have them. He ran it and found the biggest five-day temperature increase, and this is 5 days we're talking about, would be 72 degrees and set back in 1984. If we get 73, that'll be an all-time record five-day temperature increase. So we come off record cold, and then we go into a record steep warm-up if these temps verify.
This is like lunacy.
It is.
There's no other way to describe this than lunacy.
Ro, I suggested on television to our anchors, though, that there's a way to look at this. You could bundle up warmly, sit out on your porch with a thermometer, have a favorite beverage, and sit there over the next 5 days and watch the temperatures go up, you know? It's just,
I know. I've been doing that in my car. Not with the beverages, but with a little coffee.
Yeah.
But in my car, I play a little game with myself when I pull out of my garage, or I pull out of the garage here at work, how quickly it will go down. And where will it stop, right? It's sort of like... Last night, it was like, you know, what did we get down to? I think at the in the city.
We went down to 21 below in the city, and as cold as low 30s below out in the far western suburbs.
Right.
So
the...
Just a dynamite, beautiful.
19 was the lowest that I saw in this whole stretch. 19 below was the lowest on my car. And it looks broken when you see it. Yes. You know, when you see that number on anything, you're like, that's not right. Something's not working.
I know.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's not your thermometer that's broken. It's the weather.
Right. Know? Well, just, my spirit, too. I mean, that's broken as well.
Yeah.
Although...
By the way, do you have trouble reattaching the bumper after you shake it over your deck?
I just picked the car up. I'm like, bam. I just picked the car up and I
should have known,
it.
Anna.
Yeah, I know. Right.
I do. Yeah.
Hey. Tom, what did you do with your dogs during this stretch?
You know what? My roommate, Sean Lewis, got those little doggy paw things. And, you know, and put them on. It was funny watching little Callie walk along. It was this look on her face was
things.
Like, I know.
They don't like them.
Yeah. I suppose I've got to do this, but this really stinks. You know, just. And then we had that little.
And they do that thing where they walk and they're like trying to. They're walking and shaking it off at the same time.
I know.
And they're trying to not let you see that they're trying to shake it off.
Yeah. And the problem is they often succeed. So you're out there.
Yeah.
You know, we've got two of them. So there are eight. Paws that you got to get covered.
Oh, good luck.
So you get about eight, you know, six of them on, and then the first two start dropping off again, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's this little stuff you rub on the bottom of their feet. They love that, too. You know, this gel type thing that protects from the salt. But, you know, when you take them out there and the salt is down, they pull their paws up.
And you can see it's
terrible.
Painful.
Right.
It burns, you know?
Right.
And, so that's
right. They walk around like their leg is broken.
Yeah. And then they look at you and just stop. Like, what are you going to do?
What did you do?
I know.
This is your job. This is your fault.
I know. Yeah, little Maddie, our other one, looks up to me, you know, with an expression that essentially says, how could you do this to me?
That is just your interpretation of what you said.
No, they communicate. They totally communicate.
That's true. And I'm feeling like Attila the weathercasting Hun anyway for taking them out in this stuff.
Yeah.
So, it's just...
It's what are you going to do, Tom? What are you going to do? Hey, the best news is tomorrow's February 1st.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's right. We've moved. Now, that's a very important date for me.
It is. We're two-thirds of the way through meteorological winter.
And I said, so earlier today, I got asked to go out and do a stand-up with a local TV reporter here and stand outside.
Yeah.
Without, just wearing I was wearing a suit, and just in my suit, not in a big coat and everything. And he was just wearing a shirt. And we were standing outside downtown on Michigan Avenue, and he was interviewing me. Huh? And it was, here's the good thing. The good thing is we were in the sun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for the about 3.5 minutes that we were standing out there before we ran in
babies.
Well, that makes a lot of difference when you're only 5 below 0 or 8
It was 4 below. We had a thermometer. It was 4 below.
Uh-huh.
But in the sun, because the sun is higher now in the sky, we got another month of sun, of sun being higher from its low. And it was enough to keep me warm enough to stand out there and act like I wasn't cold.
Boy, yeah. I'll tell you, you've got very sensitive nerves. I don't know, until it gets above 20, my skin just
me
doesn't,
too.
You know.
I can't even act cool.
That's it.
You just can't. I give so much credit to Jen Lyons for saying that the reporters who are trying to report on the cold didn't have to stand out there and do those live shots because this was dangerous cold.
It was.
And that just seemed like a good call.
Jen is very human. You know, she really is, has our best interest in mind. And you know, how many
news directors are known for that? Yeah. News directors and program directors are known for their humanity. All right, Tom, we're going to run. Thank you, sir.
See you,
guys.
I'll yell at you
tomorrow.
Take care and you stay warm.
Thank you.
Yeah. No more standouts. Out in the sub-zero cold room.
Thank you very much.
Because there won't be any more sub-zeros after tomorrow.
Like
you know,
just
for
never again.
Never again.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it so far.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank
you, Tom.
We'll tell them that.
All right. Let's check in now. Kim, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
So Kendall Coyne up first, an Illinois native out of Northeastern University. She scored 2 goals for the United States in Pyeongchang. Last February. Kendall Coyne in the home stretch.
I just got to say something here. First of all, don't forget, NB Financial Bank wants to send you and a guest to a Blackhawks game. Fan package includes a tour of the United Center, ride on the ice during the intermission, 2 tickets to the game on February 14th, and the Hawks take on the Devils. It is your last chance. Contest ends tonight at 11:59:59. That's when it ends. So you got to go to WGNradio.com/contest to enter to win. Bank on the Blackhawks, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business. All right. Now, Kendall Coyne is joining us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline. Second person to qualify for that you truly are.
Yes.
She was in the Skills Challenge during All-Star Weekend, which just now passed, and came in 7th amongst all of the people competing in that. And
huge.
Your fastest skate is, people got to go look that up.
Oh, you do. You got to watch it.
On the interwebs and see that. That is... It is unbelievable.
She's like a blur. You could barely see it because she's going so fast. It's amazing to watch.
I am going to start a petition or a GoFundMe or something. I don't know what it is. I want Kendall Coyne to be a Blackhawk is what I want.
Let's do it.
Can you go into the draft? What can we do? How do we make this work, Kendall?
Well, first off, thanks guys so much for having me today. It's been a whirlwind of a few days. Super excited to join you. But it was an amazing moment, a historic moment, a moment that broke a bunch of barriers, and here we are today.
It is again watching you in the skills competition, and you can find it all on just go to NHL.com. It's got all that stuff up.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
It is amazing to the funny thing is, and I think that women's hockey, especially in the Olympics, you can turn on the Olympics and you see hockey, and you have to really pay attention deeply or wait to see the thing on the bottom to see that it's women's hockey. It's very hard to tell the difference between men's hockey and women's hockey now at the Olympic level. And your helmets are a little different. I mean, that's the way you have to kind of figure it out. The padding is a little different, but it is, it's fast, it's aggressive. The stick handling is amazing, and I cannot. Do you see a moment where women will be playing in the NHL, Kendall?
I think the sky's the limit. Just with the response of this past weekend, I really do. I think the sky is the limit. You saw the response from all those NHL players on the ice that night, hearing their comments afterwards. They view us as an equal. The gap is closed. Our speed, our skill, our talent, we might not hit like they do, but everything else is there. And, to get the respect that we're finally deserving, for people to, open their eyes and say, wow, women play hockey, and they do it pretty well, has been awesome. And, I really do think, sky is the limit. And all these young girls reaching out to me here today, they're going to be the ones to do that.
You know, you had something that damn near brought tears to my eyes. You said in the wake of this, what you just achieved, and there's so many achievements. You said that you've learned that your shoulders are big enough, and I'm just summarizing, to carry the weight of responsibility that you feel, but not just for you, but for the young girls watching who now see something possible that they may have not seen before. And that's a powerful thing if you think about what happens next for young girls who want to do what you do.
Absolutely, Anna. And I think, I had an amazing role model myself when I was 7 years old, and Cami Granato was a groundbreaker herself. She was literally the only girl and woman playing in the Chicagoland area from Downers Grove. And I met her when I was seven, and that's when I turned to my parents. I said, I want to go to the Olympics. Before that moment, I wanted to play for the Blackhawks. I didn't know what the Olympics were. I didn't know that girls can strive to win a gold medal. And just to see how much she changed the game along with that 98 team, that was the first ever gold medal team. Right. It's taught me what it means to be a role model. And, without her, I don't know if I'm here today. So I know the impact and the power that a role model could have. And, like Billie Jean King says, you can't be what you can't see.
Well, Kendall, much of the conversation over the past couple days has been interaction with Pierre Maguire. By the way, Kendall is now NBC Sports analyst. Congratulations,
Kendall. Well-deserved.
There's been a lot of talk about that. Some have called it mansplaining or even condescending to you. What was your reaction?
Well, let's go back and explain what it is, because this is important. Yeah. Pierre Maguire, if you watch hockey on NBC Sportsnet or NBC, Pierre Maguire, they put him in between the benches. They put him in that little glass box in between the benches, and he comments from the ice, right, as the play-by-play. Right.
And it's a quote sideline reporter.
Right, exactly. And so they go down to him in the box from time to time. Well, Kendall was in the box with him last night, and this is interesting because he started. I just want to play the beginning of this, because this is what's really getting people riled up here.
It's been exciting. It's overwhelming, and I'm so excited to join you here.
So Tampa's going to be on your left. Pittsburgh's going to be on your right. What are you expecting out of this game? We're paying you to be an analyst, not to be a fan tonight.
Okay, so it does sound a little condescending. How did you take it when it happened?
You guys probably saw my statement. I know, and I think you referred to it a little bit ago. I would love for people to go read that full statement, because we don't have time to go through it all. But, in that moment, I was focusing on my moment. I was making my debut as an analyst on NBC Sports, and Pierre was extremely excited for me in that moment. And I've known him for a long time, and I can see how the viewer took that, very condescending. And as I went back, I in that moment, I was so focused on, producing my content, what I wanted to say when he came to me, that I didn't realize it until afterwards, when I was getting a lot of messages and calls about the situation. And Pierre reached out to me this morning and apologized. And I think the biggest takeaway from that moment is, no matter how high you've been and what you've achieved in your lifetime, you can't have a man like take you down, and you got to believe in yourself and stand up for yourself. And in that moment, what he said wasn't important to me. What was important to me was I delivered what I wanted to say. I've earned the right to be there, and I think I hope people go see the full message that I put out today on social media.
I still don't want this to get in the way of you being a Blackhawk.
No, and you handle it with such honor and respect. But I think most people watching were cringing, because I don't think you needed to know which team was on the left, which one was on the right. And it did feel really awkward to have to watch that, you being an Olympian gold medalist and multiple world champion.
No, what I mean by that is not what happened with Pierre.
She's
now an analyst.
To that. I'm saying what she won't say, which is what people felt when they watched it.
Yeah.
Well, Kendall, as an analyst, what do you think of the Blackhawks' current situation, and where do you think this team's headed?
You know, they have the championship pedigree, and you can't take that away from them. They've earned that over the last, you know, 10 to 12 years, and I think you view the season in three different categories: the first half, the second half, and then the playoff run. And they're starting the second half of the season here, and I'm excited to watch them. I know they had a tough first start, obviously with a coaching change, and it wasn't the greatest start. So you know, I think they're looking forward to a fresh start. Patrick Kane had an awesome All-Star weekend, so hopefully they're refreshed and ready to go for the second half.
Patrick Kane, Roe and I have been talking. We've been talking on the show about Patrick Kane's season. Some people are saying this might be his best season ever, which is hard to believe. He's 29, 30, 31 now, and he has an MVP. But this might be the best season Patrick Kane's ever had. He's just unbelievable.
He is. I mean, I think he goes down as one of the greatest American, if not the greatest American-born player of all time.
Well, I think that's true. Shelly wants to fight you over that,
I was number 7 my whole childhood. I love Chris Chelios. So that's a bold statement.
Yeah, I know, but I know I've mentioned that to Shelly a couple times. You know, you're no longer the best American born ever. You know,
and then he pulled Roe's shirt over his head and started beating her.
Okay, you are.
Yeah, it was very weird. Anyway, and I wasn't even wearing a shirt, which was strange. I don't know why I wasn't. But the thing is that as you're watching what's happening here with this particular franchise at this particular time, you're seeing those two guys. You're seeing Kane and Taves, and you know Taves having a better season than he's had in the last couple for sure. And they're just pulling, trying to make that happen. As a person who's been on a lot of hockey teams, and you know some more successful than others. Can the Stars? For the young people on that team, are they looking? Will they step up their game because they know how close they need to be here if they want to make a playoff run?
Absolutely, and those younger players are going to look to those veteran players. Sometimes it's a simple conversation: what does it feel like to win a Stanley Cup? And it just takes a simple conversation like that to fuel a room. And there's so many guys in that room that have 2 and 3 Stanley Cups that you want to accomplish that because you're in that championship pedigree now, whether you like it or not, whether you just traded here a couple weeks ago or you've been on the team for 10, 12 years. And I think Patrick Kane said in an interview a couple weeks ago just what, you know, Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook's presence bring to the locker room. Forget their whole on-ice abilities, which are, you don't have to speak about them, but it just speaks to volumes that the leadership they have in that room and the presence and strength that they bring day in and day out. So I'm excited for the second half. I know a lot of Chicago was upset with their first half, but I think you know we can rally around them for the second half.
I like it. We can rally around. I like Kendall. I like what I'm hearing right here. Are you gonna now? Are you staying? Your kid? Yeah, obviously you're just working in broadcast, so you maintain your Olympic eligibility, right? You don't. There's no change there.
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm just you're going to be in the 2022. You want to continue on?
I do, and okay. A lot of work to get there. It would be a dream to go to 3 Olympic Games and represent the city of Chicago. But we have to take it one step at a time, one national team year at a time. So that's a long way away.
Okay. All right. I know. I'm sitting. And again, and if the Hawks call, I don't know how they do this. I don't know if there's a way to do this. But if the Hawks call, take the call. Because I'm telling you, I mean, if you when you watch this video of her in the skills challenge,
it's incredible.
You're like, why? I mean, it's minutes before there are women playing, I think, in the National Hockey League. You make the point that the physical nature of the National Hockey League in terms of checking and the way that the guys hit. But your speed and your skill, I would put up against almost any of those guys. So congratulations.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. And I think, you know, one thing that goes without saying, while I was in that moment, I think all of my teammates, you know, deserve a heck of a amount of credit because we've put a product on the ice for people to believe in us, for the NHL to put us in that moment and, you know, believe that we could compete with the men. And I think any one of my teammates could have been in that situation, and here we are today. The sky's the limit, and I'm excited to see what next year brings.
Yeah, we're excited to see what happens next for you, Kendall. So,
all right, Kendall Coyne, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for all the support, always.
Yep, she's our girl.
Thought thought you were going to reach out and try to be your agent there for a second there. Ron.
Baby, darling, sweetheart, bubby, listen.
Get John McDonough on the phone.
I know Rocky, John McDonough. Rocky works on line three. McDonough on line two.
He's not really calling yet for you, but...
Jay Blunk on line one. I don't know which one we want to talk to, starting with first.
It's only a matter of time, though.
Go watch that video. It is so inspiring, especially if you have... kids who are playing hockey. You got girls who are playing hockey right now who are just starting to skate. We see them at the United Center all the time.
These
groups of kids who are out there doing this.
My little girl skates at Johnny's Ice House, and there are a bunch of girls doing it. I mean, it's just, when I was growing up, not so much. You didn't see it.
Wait till you see. Just watch the thing where she sets some sort of a record in the speed part, the speed skate, where they go around. They have to make it around the barrels and the corners, and just one lap around the ice. And it's shocking when you see how good and fast she is. And you're just thinking that it really is a matter of time. I mean, the rules, I don't think, are going to change here in terms of checking in the NHL, because it's a different game in the women's game. But I'm sort of surprised that women's hockey hasn't taken off as a national sport in the way that, obviously, as an Olympic sport it has, but as a commercial sport, because... I'm telling you, when you watch it on TV, it takes a while to figure out it's not men's hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And the women's national hockey team here in the U.S. is so good. It has been so good for a while now.
Suck on that, Canada.
Suck on that, Canada. Gold medal winners.
Russia.
Right. All right. May I just talk to Kim Gordon first about what's coming up at the top of the hour? From Concho with Anna DeVlantis, 720 WGN. Richard Roper has stepped into the studio.
Yes.
Listen, get out there and enjoy the good weather, folks. It's starting to warm up out
negative
there.
Negative one. Woo!
Get
the
those
city.
Cargo shorts going if you're one of those big guys that's on the way to the health club to do some powerlifting. I like those guys.
Oh, you're going to see cargo shorts over the weekend.
Yeah. Totally.
As soon as it breaks past 32, guys are going to be walking around in cutoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Short sleeve shirts,
flip flops. It's going to be the D-bag Olympics on Armitage Avenue.
Wearing that T-shirt. Ask me where I got these Crocs.
Yeah,
backwards visor. The whole look.
I got to turn mine around now.
All right. Hey, let's get through this. We're pretending it's Friday.
Okay.
Now we're going to be here tomorrow, but we get off a little early because the Blackhawks start the second half of the season tomorrow with up against the hated, dreaded, feared Buffaloes, the Sabres. I hate them. I just
kind of hate all of the opponents.
I kind of hate all the opponents, but that Eastern Conference, they're so snotty in the Eastern Conference.
Yes, they
are. Half of them don't speak English anyway; they speak Canadian,
right? It's a problem.
Anyway, the whole league just speaks Canadian when you stop and you think about it.
Kind of do.
But the point is that we decided we want to make this like a full Friday because it's been a rough week. And the closer we get to this, the better off we're going to feel.
Mm-hmm.
We got a Carnarvon Wagon rollout. Mott Street and Little Mott are here.
It's great.
But actually, Chef Kim, who is one of the most renowned chefs in North America, I'm including Canada in that, is here to tell us about.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big, big deal.
He's huge.
And then we got live music.
Nice.
There you go.
So it doesn't get much better than this. That's all I'm going to say.
Not.
All right, so you want to do first? I think we'll do this. That's what we're going to do. Hold on. We're going to do this. Don't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm. It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
I'll do that.
Number five.
Roger Stone was at a press conference about special counsel Robert Mueller's charges against him and how he plans to fight them. And once again, he says he is not going to lie on the president.
All I can tell you today is I will tell the truth about any matter that I have knowledge of. I don't possess any knowledge of any wrongdoing by the President of the United States, including Russian collusion. So when I first said I won't testify against the President, some of you said, aha, you see, it's a cover-up. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I will not make up stories. I will not bear false witness. I will not say things that are not true. I will tell the truth.
Yeah, but...
He's not known for that, really.
Right, true. And he'd be the first to tell you that he's a professional liar and a BS artist. But secondly, and I think this is the important thing, will you tell the truth about his own behavior in this and his own relationship with the Russians and with WikiLeaks? What about that? What about that? And, hey, do you need a pardon?
Have I asked the president for a pardon? The answer is no. Have I discussed it with anyone who works for the president? The answer is no. The only person I have ever written to the president advocating a pardon for is Marcus Garvey.
What a guy. See that? He's fighting for justice.
Right.
It may be the brilliance of Donald Trump that he surrounds himself with such slippery eels and skunks that when it's time for them to turn on him, no one believes them.
That's true.
You know?
That's an excellent point.
Give me the worst of the worst.
Right. Like Michael Cohen. Who's going to believe Michael? Although Michael Cohen now has the best legal counsel in the world.
He does.
That's true.
With our own Mike Monaco.
Absolutely.
If you missed this story earlier this week, our own Mike Monaco, the official lawyer of the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis, is now Michael Cohen's lawyer.
Wow.
How did that happen?
Well, they knew who to call.
And they did.
Cohen was probably listening to the show on one of his streaming devices one day. It's like, I gotta get that guy.
That's the guy.
He smells good through
and
the speakers.
Good.
That's true. He is actually sartorially splendid, unlike Michael Cohen, who thinks
Roger Stone, who thinks he is. We could see the orange stopped at his ears the other day on Roger Stone.
That's true.
He applied.
That is true. Well, he was using the same orange that the president
was amazing.
Using.
Yeah. Can I borrow that?
Checking in at
number four.
With Nancy Pelosi stating that she will not let any more funding go towards a wall.
No.
Don't say wall.
No wall. Infrastructure. We'll talk about infrastructure.
Not a wall. The president says that he will not do anything unless there's a wall.
We are building a lot of wall. You know, I'm not waiting for this committee. And I've told a lot of people, I don't expect much coming out of the committee because I keep hearing the words that we'll give you what you want, but we're not going to give you a wall. And the problem is, if they don't give us a wall, it doesn't work. Without a wall, it doesn't work.
But he says he's already building a wall.
That's what he
said says today. He's already started building a wall, which, again, see, that's the thing. How dumb does he think his base is? That they, I mean, it's really insulting when you stop and you think about it. Yes, they're working on a wall. They are constantly working down on the border. Either the Obama administration okayed an extension of mileage and a refurbishing of, you know, there's been a wall down there forever. This is not sea to shining sea wall, but there's been obviously physical barrier. You see it on the news.
Yeah. And sea to shiny sea is what the president calls it. He says all the time, from sea to shiny sea. I think you might have seen that on Sesame Street or something.
That means something totally different.
But we pay hundreds of millions of dollars to Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. And then they have caravans leaving their country coming up here. And by the way, if you go to Tijuana and you take down that wall, you will have so many people coming into our country that Nancy Pelosi will be begging for a wall. She'll be begging for a wall. She will say, Mr. President, please, please give us a wall.
Okay, who said anything about taking down the wall? This is an argument. What we're in now is a fourth grade argument about a wall. Uh-huh. And everybody's going to stand and stomp their feet about the word wall. We know that there's already, whether it's a wall or fence or whatever the hell that thing is down there, that thing with the slats.
Mm-hmm. The steel slats.
Yeah. That's whatever we have, and we've got a mixture of stuff along the border, which we've been building for years and refurbishing for years. And sometimes we take the wall, there were concrete walls, and then Border Patrol said what we need is slats so we can see what's going on the other side, right? They've had issues. You go down to San Diego, you see what's going on. It is what it is. Yeah, we all get it. And nobody wants people just rushing in. And by the way, the president describes it is, you know, that you've got hoarding armies just coming right across like it's some Western movie. That's not what's going on either. And he's not building new wall. He's not building a new wall that he just started on his own. This is something that was already in the budget from years ago, the extension. So he's the one, I'm sorry, he's the one who has made it very political. And all we got, and you know, he could have gotten what he wants, not see the shiny sea, but he could have gotten what he wants by just saying, hey, we're going to extend a little here. We need also enhanced surveillance capability, more Border Patrol folks, more money for housing of people that are, you know, coming across that we stop and they got the kids. And what are we going to do? We're not going to just send them to the other side. We got to do something about it. What are we going to do? And how do we, and judges down there to adjudicate and send the people back that do not qualify. And that is the majority of people. I get all that. That's all true. Mm-hmm. But if you have a conversation about it, you get it done.
Whoa.
No wall!
Seems to know a lot about what's going on in Tijuana. Might have to look into that.
Have you ever seen the donkey show?
Oh,
I swear.
Geez.
Oh, wait a second. Oh. He's like Fredo. He is like Fredo. Watch this. Wait, he's going to take his cape off. Watch this.
That's so true.
You're not going to believe it. Senator Geary.
Not dumb, like everybody says. Smart.
3, 2, and 1. Right after, we've got Kim Gordon with the WGN News update. She's going to tell us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Did you look that up, Rich?
Is there such a supply and ungenerous or inadequate amount of.
Yeah.
How about that? Phil Fattel's a wordsmith, yes. Too.
Be economical or frugal about spending or providing something.
Exactly.
That's an important thing.
Have a stint on morning radio one day, too. That's another way to have a stint.
Cheesy radio guy does a little stinting now and again.
Does a stunt a stint? Oh, boy. Jeez.
That's a call for that.
All right, the top five continues. Here we go.
Number 3.
Political rivals and educators took Governor Matt Bevin to task after he told a talk radio host on WHAS, The Wars.
That's my old station.
No, really?
Oh, no.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Is that Kentucky? Governor
That's in Lexington,
yes,
right?
Yes, I'm a Kentucky girl.
Is that Lexington?
Kim.
Louisville.
Louisville.
And you don't say Louisville. You say Louisville.
No, I've always said Louisville. I know it's the Louisville thing, but no, I say Louisville.
It's a beautiful state, though.
It is.
That is just gorgeous. I think Lexington is one of the great underrated cities in America.
It is beautiful.
Yeah. But that's not why we called. This has nothing to do with the new governor of Kentucky was complaining about the kids getting the day off from school because it was cold by saying this old trope. We're getting soft.
Oh, jeez.
You know, now we cancel school for cold. I mean, come on now. I mean, there's no ice going with it or any snow. I mean, what happens to America? We're getting soft. I do appreciate it's better to err on the side of being safe, and I'm being only slightly facetious, but it does concern me a little bit that in America, on this and any number of other fronts, we're sending messages to our young people that if life is hard, you can curl up in the fetal position somewhere in a warm place and just wait till it stops being hard, and that just isn't reality. Just isn't.
I'd like to know the toughest thing that guy ever did. That's what I would like to know.
Let me tell you, they've been soft in Kentucky in the winter for years. I mean, we'd get a dusting of snow and kids would be off.
Oh, well, damn kids. Country's going to hell.
Thank you, Kev. The issue, another, that, you know what? That was some countrified gibberish if I've ever heard it. Hey, it is 9 people are dead,
yeah,
right, from this thing. Now, Kentucky, it's not as cold as it was as it is here.
It's still been below zero, though.
Right. And they're not, you know, people. But the thing is that people are not supplied.
They're not prepared for it. That's
not
the key.
All.
The way
they
that we
like
are here.
It's just like, yeah, it's like when they get that dusting in Georgia of snow and people out there with their brooms.
Right. Because they don't have it.
They don't have shovels. They don't have ice. Or salt, you know.
So you're asking for problems if everyone gets on the roads and all the kids get on
the school
buses.
I think we're pro-Governor Bevin here almost. No, we're not. No. And you know who really isn't?
Uh-oh.
Al Roker.
Now, by the way, I just have to say this. Nitwit governor in Kentucky saying that we're weak. These are kids who are going to be in sub-zero wind chills. No, cancel school. Stop it. You know, adults, if they want to be out there, that's great. These are our children. You know, I'm glad you're not a teacher.
Ooh. Well, how about that?
Yeah. Tell them, Al.
And Bevin has like 8 children, by the way.
Oh, that, okay.
I bet they're not soft. That,
well, there's your answer right there, Kim. He was like, wait a minute.
Get out there.
I got 8 kids. Yeah, they're going to be home?
A lot of kids. Yeah, you don't want them home.
He's like, look, he send them out in anything.
Yeah, well, it's probably his wife saying, oh, please don't do that to me.
Listen, let me just tell you something. This is... These are the people who also don't believe in the wind chill. It's cold. Wind chill isn't real anyway. Really? You go stand in it.
Yeah.
You go stand in it. All right, Bevan. You know what I want you to do? It's Bevan, right? Is that the guy's name?
It's Bevan.
Yeah, Bevan. You know what I want you to go do? I want you to go out there in your skorts and your flip-flops and stand around. Let's see how tough you are. Let's see how tough.
His wife. I've been pregnant for 72 months, okay, pal of my life.
You get out of the house.
Talking
do
about
more radio interviews.
I'm soft.
Send all your right. children out into the freezing cold and toughen them up.
I do like that edgy L. Roker, though.
I know. Right. I know.
Well, he has to get up too early.
Number two.
And he's always hungry. Earlier today on Sports Central right with Adam Hoge, live from Super Bowl EEE.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
Former Bears kicker Robbie Gould said this.
So, you know, I think Cody can come back and have a bounce back year. I think they're going to provide some competition for him at some level. I don't think they're done signing guys, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think they have a young kid in there that will give them, push them for now, and then they'll see what's going on in free agency. And, you know, they're in a tough situation because they have $20 million in cap. They're going to have to get rid of some guys in order to make space if they want to sign a bigger free agent kicker, which is a possibility, but they're going to have to maneuver some things. But I think, you know, if you can get an older guy that can come in and push Cody, give him some competition, I think he'll have a bounce back year for sure.
If you listen to this interview, he basically 100% says, sign me, Chicago. Yeah, goes, bring me back to Chicago.
It's a 92.7% chance someone good could come in. Hey, that was my percentage last year.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Adam, you may have heard I'm the franchise leading scorer of all time.
I mean, where would they find a free agent?
Right.
Who knows Soldier Field and the ins and outs?
And let me ask you this. It's like, you know, they would bring in a guy to, you know, give him some competition. Like, there'd be any competition.
Maybe
here.
A veteran kicker who's been around the league.
Yeah, I mean, that's for sure. They would have to bring in a guy to do it.
Maybe he has a family still living in Chicago and three young children he'd like to raise in the wonderful city
Joining
of Chicago.
Joining us now to assess the Democratic candidates is Howard Schultz. So tell us what he thinks of the candidates. Any ideas?
Number one.
Get ready for February 7th because Ron Burgundy has figured out podcasting.
Terrific.
And released a trailer for The Legendary Newsman.
On the Ron Burgundy podcast, Ron asks the most hard-hitting questions.
What are your thoughts on climate change? Go. Is it upsetting that you can't fly? Is it hard for you to eat chicken? Let's talk about Pete Rose. Do you ever run into that guy? Because he owes me money. What do you do about the haters? Can chickens have epilepsy? Have people ever thrown batteries or pennies at you? What is the deal with the Philly fanatic? That guy's a weirdo, right? What if they lowered you out of a spaceship? Morgana, the kissing bandit. Was she ever caught? So you hatch out of the egg, onto the field. What was that like? I'd love to see you work with Lars von Trier. Any interest?
Oh, great.
Yeah. Fantastic.
We'll be back with more right here on the Ron Burgundy Podcast.
Terrific.
Close it up.
The top five at five.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here? I want one bourbon, one shot, one beer, one bourbon, one shot, one beer.
Tastes great, makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life. And I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it. I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
And by the way, I just have to say, this nitwit governor in Kentucky saying that, oh, we're weak. These are kids who are going to be in sub-zero wind chills. No. Cancel school. Stop it. You know, adults, if they want to be out there, that's great. These are our children, you know. I'm glad you're not a teacher.
Oh, man. Al Roker. He's, hey, you know what?
On fire.
You could tell he maybe had a little too much to drink the night before. Yeah. It's a little brittle. Sort of like I am right now. Sure. I'm a little brittle. I'm a little broken. But thank God. Now, I know what you're saying. It's Friday? No, it's Thursday. But tomorrow, we haven't had a Carnival Wagon in like a month.
That's feels like
probably
it.
Longest
right?
ever for you,
right?
I would
it's
think.
The longest 20 years, right? ever mm-hmm. of a Carnival Wagon. It was almost like a, well, you know, the government shut down, of course, Carnival Wagon. You know, the budget.
You
the
couldn't
budget
go on with that.
Yeah. But now, because we got Blackhawks, we had a bunch of conflicts, so we had Hawks right. tomorrow as well. So we wanted to get one in, and no better than Mott Street mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is coming in. One of
fabulous
my favorite restaurants in the world,
mm.
and it is. And now there's a mini Mott. This
love
is really
that.
I don't
love
know
that.
I don't know how that whole thing worked out. Edward Kim is an internationally renowned chef, and along with Nate Chung, and you guys are partners and chefs together. It is what you have done to the humble wing, to the humble hamburger, to make it this. I mean, it's like a. It is your stuff is so crave-worthy. It is insane. So congratulations on
Thank
that.
Thank you so much.
Now, you've been in here before, and I can never say enough about how great Mott Street is in Chicago. You got now the two locations, right? Still have the original Mott Street. You keep painting the outside of it, and I keep getting lost when I go by.
Is that it?
Yeah, I don't know why they do that, though. It's such a cool little room, too. It's like it's always packed. It's always fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to sit at the bar because mm-hmm. your bar service is – and that, what are there, six – There are eight, I think, at the bar, maybe at Mott Street.
How many seats are there?
Yeah.
There are 12. We squished 12 people up there.
There's 12 up there?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, it's built for six, but there's 12.
All right. Make some new friends.
Try to squeeze
right.
them in there.
Yeah. And your, right. And your bartenders are great servers. You know, they get, they're so...
Key. That's
you know,
key.
Right. Yeah. And they understand the alcohol, and they understand the food, and that you know, it's all about the... They educate you as you're going through it. But again, sometimes it's as simple as a burger, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This burger's got national accolades. Their burger voted among the top 10 of all time. That's pretty awesome.
If you have a hangover,
that's huge.
It will not only cure your
really?
Hangover, but it will change your life.
Wow.
Because you get real emotional, right? On the hangover and the thing like a Sunday morning, do the brunch. And,
speaking of experience, Ro.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's what it is.
Oh, he is.
That's
he
at 1401 North Ashland, the main
That's the main Mott.
And then the little Mott is at 3057 West Logan Boulevard.
That's correct.
Wow, yeah. Look at you.
One of my favorite quotes from Nate regarding our burger when he was interviewed about that was he said that the great thing about our burger is that it tastes like a burger. We gave him a lot of crap about that, but...
that's actually... There's a simple brilliance to that statement, actually, because too many people get too involved. We're going to reinvent the burger and put so many things on it. Where's the burger inside this thing?
Right.
You know what you do, though? You can have the burger. If you're there with a four-top, couples going out, you order the burger as an appetizer. You
cut it four ways.
And then let the other stuff go.
Pro tip.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a pro tip because people got to try that, right? And it's not always on, right? You have it at lunch.
At so our original location only opened for dinner, mm-hmm. and we only allow the burger between 6 and 7.
Right.
Wow. Outside of the bar.
Yeah.
The restaurant can't handle it. We don't have any flat tops, so we're not designed to be doing burgers all night. And so when we first did it, we put it on the menu to add to our bar menu, mm-hmm. to add to the bar experience, and it just caught on. And
but you do it for brunch, though. You do it brunch
for
brunch on Sunday.
For brunch, you can get it all day.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know. All right. Yes. That's what I needed to know. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's
I gotta say though that people who love your burger and they talk about it. You just gave me the jackfruit version.
Yes.
I would challenge anyone who's a meat eater to eat this. It is
no kidding,
so fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You created something amazing here.
Yeah, I think I'm Korean and so I'm used to eating a lot of vegetables growing up with that kind of cuisine. And I think the amazing thing about being pescatarian or vegetarian is there's so many options out there.
Mm. Oh yeah,
and the only way you go bad is when you try to make it really taste like meat.
I think,
you know, the jackfruit can be, you're not going to miss carnitas or anything like that. And some people might think it might taste like that. But, I mean, a great vegetable is nothing to
right.
Like, right.
Know. Oh, no question about
flavor
that.
Flavor is amazing.
All right. So, let's, Edward, I'd love to keep talking about the food. But what about the drinking?
Yep.
What did you bring? Yes. You brought a hot toddy. Mm-hmm. See, now the hot toddy I always thought was a myth.
Mm-mm.
I just, you know, people go, a hot toddy was something that, you know, that
didn't exist.
That, well, right, that Warren G. Harding was drinking, you know, 100 years ago.
Okay, well, I think it's perfect for this weather out here.
Mm. Fantastic.
Nate, who's my business partner, can fill us in on
I was sick the other week and feeling a little under the weather.
Mm-hmm.
get it, put one of these together and feel.
See, that's the secret.
I know that
Nate was like, wait a minute, I have access to ingredients.
So what is it? What is a hot? I mean, it's really good, but
basically, it's whiskey with hot water.
Mm-hmm.
But we throw like lemon in there, honey. What makes it different for us is we put some Szechuan peppercorn in it.
Oh. That's what I was getting. I was getting something there
some
that was
zest.
Like, it really comes down the throat like nicely, though. Very warm. Like the second level of warmth. Yes.
You said Szechuan pepper, like.
Yeah, exactly. It numbs your mouth. It numbs your insides, numbs your.
Ha.
It's like frostbite.
Well, listen. A couple of us in this room had our insides numbed around 1994, but that's still good.
At least nightly. Yeah. You know what's interesting?
It's so good.
Delicious.
About actually the whole thing at Mott Street is that if you like spicy, if you don't like
love
spicy, don't
spicy.
Worry about it. There's a billion things on the menu, and you can order things to spice up and spice down. But they have this capability of keeping this like spice level throughout the entire meal that is like at the same level the whole time. It's not super spicy. It's just a level of heat that lets you know. And that to me is the most pleasing way to have a dinner. If you like spice, it's great. It's perfect. Nothing really kills you.
Right. Spice for flavors.
Right.
Not to whack you, knock you out, right?
Punch you in the face.
Exactly.
Punch you in the face.
All right. So we got the hot toddy, and then what else we got?
We have a gin and tonic. We call it 8-foot vertical leap. We make it with Leatherby gin, made in Logan Square. And we do a house-made tonic. That's what sets us apart. We boil up cinchona bark, citric acid, lemon, cardamom, pink peppercorns and lavender.
Amazing.
Okay.
That's what sets it apart.
Yeah.
Got those aromatics in there.
Yeah. It's not like the tonic that you're getting. Nothing wrong with Schweppes, but still, it's a different sort of situation that we got going on here. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And again, when you go there, and the bartenders can like explain the whole thing to you. And what's another fascinating thing is how local everything is. You're sourcing the liquor locally.
Yeah, yeah.
The wines are really unique and interesting.
That's cool.
They tell stories about wines. You got wines from all over the United States, and they explain, like, you know, I don't know, you guys go out and find them, or your distributors find them, but it's not the wines that you're getting at all the other restaurants.
Not at all.
And it's like and all of a sudden you get a wine, you're like, oh my God, why have I never heard of this before? Wow. It's really true.
I mean, the point of it isn't to like make something to serve just things that are exotic, but really at the end of the day, we want it to taste good.
Yeah,
And that's really what the driving force of our beverage program. Any cocktail we put up, any wine we choose, any beer we choose, does it go with the food? Does it celebrate the spice? Does it balance the spice?
Yeah.
Does it numb your mouth? Does it take you on an adventure?
And what I like is you don't really have the downtown prices. You've got you can get a $10, $11 glass of wine there. Mm-hmm. That's spectacular.
Nice,
absolutely. Right. Which sounds like a downtown price, but not anymore.
It's not at all.
It's now a $30 wine downtown if you want to do that, which is kind of crazy. All right, and then your last
item. So we have, this is the most unique one. We love kombucha. It's nice and funky. We serve a rye kombucha made in Bridgeport, but we wanted to boost it up a little bit, so we added sake. So kombucha is a little funky, a little fermenty, a little pickly. What would pair better than that with funky sake?
Whoa.
Aromatic, lactic, and then together, you know, again, just
aromatic
like,
and lactic. Yeah, they were on the morning show for many years.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
I like that. And what is? Now, can you explain kombucha to me? Because, I mean, you see it everywhere now.
You do.
Right.
I don't know, buy it everywhere.
But what is it?
Yeah, it's good for you, number one.
Live
probiotics. A lot of probiotics, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's a tea that's fermented. It looks like this brain-looking organism. My friends used to make it on the patio. And
no wonder you were sick a couple weeks ago.
Right? And at some point, like the natural sugars like just blow up, and it tastes like apple juice.
Yes.
It's fantastic. Mm. But outside of that window, not so great.
You got to get the window right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's it. Because I saw, and there's stores now that have like a tap for it,
mm-hmm.
where you just get, you know, you bring your own kombucha bottle,
mm-hmm.
and then you fill it up from the tap in the store. And I'm like, now what kind of millennial crap is that? The first thing that I stop and think about. But it is really good. And sake, I love sake. So it's like, you can't go wrong.
Absolutely.
Cold, hot.
It's very good.
It is what it is. And, you know, and Edward, we go back to you for a second here, in terms of the, you know, as a chef, you've done this sort of a pan-Asian fusion thing, you know, through Ruxpin Group and all that, and all the great restaurants that you've been involved with. And it blows me away that Now, a lot of people are trying this. You were like sort of the, you know, the first guy to bring it to Chicago and make it, you know, really, really, really sing here. Yeah. But it is, it's kind of where we're heading, isn't it? Because the Korean spices and the Asian spices are just becoming a part of American food the same way that the Mexican spices 30 years ago became part of American food.
So true.
Yeah. I think we're always looking for new and special ingredients. And, you know, as I spoke on your program before, like, you know, one of the great things about Chicago is the diversity here. Our second generation, third generation, Koreans, Chinese, just the entire group of just all the different ethnic groups that we have out here. It makes sense. We're, you know, all working together and making great Chicago food. So, yeah, everybody's always looking for
different. Everybody's got kimchi. Yeah. I'm waiting for Gibson's to put kimchi on as a side.
I think it's everywhere.
I think it's going to happen at some point. But it's so great. And the spice, again, if you like spice and you think that the Western Hemisphere spice is something, mm-hmm. you should try some of the Asian spice, because it is like the Korean, that red hot sauce that you can get in. There's some Korean restaurants in town that mm-hmm. are, you know, I mean, you walk away and you're like, I'm not going to survive this. It was great going down. I have no idea what's going to be like in 6 hours. I might just go to Northwestern now.
Oh, boy.
But it is so amazing. And now it's, you know, because we kind of went to the sriracha piece here, mm-hmm. but those are training wheels compared to what's going on there, right? It tastes great too.
Yeah, it all depends. Like, kimchi is so diverse. I think that's the thing that's most synonymous with Korean food.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you cook it, it can become very, very spicy. When you have it in its cold pickled state, then it tends to be a little bit more effervescent and balanced.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about, I love all types of food, but, you know, one of the things that we're striving for is the balance of flavors at our restaurants. And, like, if you have too much of one thing, it's just going to punch you in the face.
Right.
And so,
no, that's true. Yeah.
I have a question. So we've got Mott Street, right, uh-huh. which is the one on Ashland. Now we got Mini Mott on West Logan Boulevard. How about the next level where it's almost not Mott and it's just one chair for row and like a phone booth? How about that? That could be the next one for you guys. You got that idea? That's on me. That's on me.
Bartender.
Yeah, almost not Mott, but still a Mott.
Yeah, and it's just me. And I get to go there three times a day, and you have to be open for lunch. You're going to have to be open for breakfast and for dinner.
One little stool, like an old kind of diner stool there for you to swivel around in.
I cannot, you can hear it, but I cannot tell you what a fan I am of what you guys have done.
Both of these two.
Mott Street and now Mini Mott, which is now Logan Square. You know, suck on that, Logan Square hipsters. Yeah. Wait, I mean, if you have not been making it over to whatever, what is
we Chicago? Love our Logan Square hipsters, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, right.
Definitely. Not to alienate those people.
Right, but I just want to say that
with those credit cards that say expire 2027.
Right, but that's the thing. Go and this is the for real deal.
Yeah.
I know there's great restaurants in Logan Square, but wait till you, if you have not done the Mott Street, wait till you see what you're up for here. It's unbelievable. Well, congratulations again,
great
gentlemen.
Job,
thank you guys so much.
Appreciate it very much. And if you are you now, can people pick up wings for Sunday if they want to do that?
Yes,
are you doing that?
We're super excited. That's one of the things that we're pushing for is we have a catering menu. Just go to our website. And, you know, I'm so happy to bring all this food and drink to you guys, because I was sampling it before we went on air, and I was like, you know what? I would be very excited to have this at my Super Bowl party.
That's a great idea.
Mott Street, Chicago.
I love that.
You'll knock your Super Bowl friends out.
Exactly.
Like,
take it to the next level, right?
Yeah. How did you do this?
Like, what?
Yeah, MottStreetChicago.com. You got a wide array of things there, too. It's really amazing stuff. All right, guys.
Beautiful.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Let's now check in with Kim. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
I don't like newfangled, damn skinny like jeans. Can't stand people talking, not saying a damn thing. Just give me no two-step, a little here, a little out.
Rocanjo with Anna DeVlantis.
Yes.
That's Boo Ray, alt-country troubadour, and he is warming up in Studio G right now.
Yeah,
it's live music Thursday.
Like it.
Would be live music Friday, but tomorrow we're off early because of the Blackhawks and the Buffaloes.
Okay, the Sabres.
Actually, they're in Buffalo to take on the Sabres.
Oh, wow.
If you call them the Buffaloes, people think it's some team called the Buffaloes.
Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
in Buffalo playing the Sabres.
Yes. That's Redneck Rock and Roll from the album Sea of Lights. Nice. Boo Ray is going to be with us. Boo Ray is playing at Haymarket tonight. You do not want to miss this. You do not want to miss it.
Cool. No.
With Nikki Morgan, who's been on the program, too.
She's amazing as well. Amazing.
All right. And let me say one other thing before we get to Richard's reviews for the weekend. Okay. MB Financial Bank wants to send you and a guest to a Blackhawks game. Fan package includes a tour of the United Center, ride on the ice during admission, two tickets to the game, February 14th, when the Hawks take on the Devils. It's your last chance because the contest ends tonight at 11:59 and 59 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Don't waste time. Go enter right now, WGNradio.com/contest. Enter to win. Bank on the Blackhawks, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business. All right.
All right.
All right.
Mr. Roper.
How are we doing?
I don't know. How are we doing?
Well, let's talk about some movies. And, you know, mm-hmm. we got to just acknowledge sometimes that it's just the Netflix world and we're living in it.
Isn't
these
it
days.
True?
It feels like, you know, sometimes we talk about how Disney and Marvel are controlling the universe. But I wanted to talk to you guys about a couple of different things that are going to be available on Netflix, I think, starting tomorrow. Let's start with Velvet Buzzsaw, which sounds like a Lou Reed album from around 1977. It actually does have kind of a punk rock connotation. But Velvet Buzzsaw is a movie like you've probably never seen before. Now, here's the setup for Velvet Buzzsaw. Jake Gyllenhaal plays an art critic, probably the most influential art critic in the world. He's trafficking in that very pretentious art world where people are deciding whether to spend $6 million on this and $7 million on that. And the cast of this movie is amazing because John Malkovich plays this legendary like installation artist whose work speaks for itself and right. is just a complete pompous ass to everybody.
Perfect.
And John Malkovich is so great at it. Even he, you know, and he always has a great way with lines. He's got these two giant, like, he's got like a Doberman pincher type of dog. And at one point when someone comes to his house, he says to his dog, down boy, not yet. Which is the greatest thing ever, you know, to put someone like going, wait a minute, what's going on here? Renee Russo's in this film, Toni Collette, who's a great actress. So for the first 40 minutes or so, Velvet Buzzsaw is just skewering the art world. If you remember Sacha Baron Cohen in Who's America series, they had a whole episode yes. where he took off after the art world, right?
Yeah.
This is kind of like that, only a fictional version. Then it turns into, I don't want to give too much away, but I would say it turns into kind of a Night Gallery or Twilight Zone episode. They discover the works of an old man who has died, and he's got these crazy paintings that are haunting and mesmerizing. And let's just say that if you walk into a room, and a lot of the paintings are of like people suffering and, you know, those really kind of violent, kind of weird artworks you see. And if you think maybe the eyes in the painting are following you, or the painting might even reach out and say hello and not necessarily a friendly way. That happens in this movie.
Uh-oh.
It turns into... Creepy. Remember those Final Destination movies where everybody avoids death, but then it turns out they had cheated death and then they die anyway? It's kind of like the art world version of that. It's the first art satire slasher movie ever made.
Oh,
and
slasher.
I love it!
You love it.
3.5 stars for the Velvet Buzzsaw. But no going into it. For the first half hour, you're like, oh my gosh, a comedy of manners where everybody's get all this kind of, you know, sophisticated dialogue and all this kind of insightful, you know, gleanings about the world of art and how it sometimes is wonderful and sometimes pretentious. And then all of a sudden, oh, she got her arm cut off. That's going to be bad.
Oh.
And I have to give away. It's going to be on Netflix
tomorrow.
It premiered at Sundance just the other day, and now people get a chance to see it. I'm going to give away one scene. Just so to tell you how crazy this is, there is a scene where an art curator in the middle of the night, something really, really horrible happens to her, and she bleeds to death. So she's on the ground, you know, she's on the floor in like a Museum of Contemporary Art type of setting, her blood all around her. And when the gallery opens the next day and people start coming in, they think it's part of the art project that's going on there.
Like performance art.
Yes!
Oh, gee.
Including a tour of school kids.
I don't think it feels real to me.
They're like, oh, this blood, that's not realistic blood, and they're sliding around in it.
Wow.
Dark humor in Velvet Buzzsaw.
Ooh.
I don't understand.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Got a great cast.
Certainly.
Who doesn't love the Jake Gyllenhaal?
Well, you remember a couple years ago, he was in that movie called Nightcrawler, where he played the stringer for an LA TV station, and it was really dark. He got nominated for an Oscar. The writer and director, Dan Gilroy, is also the writer and director of this one. And his wife is Renee Russo, who's been in both of those movies, too, who's been around. You know, remember her from Tin Cup and tons of other movies.
Yeah.
So
right.
The cast is off the charts. The humor is very dark, and the blood, it's like if you went to see Blue Man Group and you're in the first row, you should like wear a hefty bag and watching this, even at home.
Okay. All right.
And that's the lighter of the two offerings we have.
Gee.
All right. You know what? Stand by, because we do want to talk about this Ted Bundy.
Yeah, I really do want to talk to you guys about that.
Film, because
a lot of controversy.
It has a limited series, right?
This is the limited series. There's also a movie coming out starring Zac Efron as Ted Bundy, a fictional film that's also generating controversy. But we're going to talk first about the Netflix limited series.
Everybody's all nuts about this stuff.
Yeah.
Why does everybody have to be so mad about everything right now? Our level.
Who's asking? Why do you have to ask about why we're so mad?
Our level of offense has just gotten off the charts. Everyone's offended about something, or you know, wants to punch another guy in the nose.
Well, I'm interested to hear what you say about this, because some say they're glorifying the charisma and the sexuality of Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy, yeah.
All right, Velvet Buzzsaw, 3.5 stars.
Yes,
watch it on Netflix.
Yes,
did not go to the theaters.
No. It might be in some limited release, but they wanted to get it out there at Sundance, because now, once again, we're talking about eligibility for awards. Hey, it had a theatrical release.
How does it make any money when it goes on Netflix? Netflix pays the rights to it?
Yeah. Well, and Netflix, of course, as you know, every once in a while you find out that your monthly subscription is being raised.
It just did.
I don't think anybody ever cancels, because they're like, oh, okay, another dollar. Let's binge watch 50 shows.
Well, you don't know it. You have to go through your credit card with a fine-tooth comb to figure it out, because you got so many subscription services.
That's true.
It's still so low, like you say.
For all of the stuff
that you get.
It's too much. I sometimes go through the menu of Netflix. I have all three. Mm-hmm. The Prime, the Netflix, and the Hulu. And I will take a minute or an hour and 15 minutes to go through all of my offerings. And then I'm too tired to watch it and I go to sleep.
I do the same
thing. It's true. There are comics on Netflix of specials I've never heard of, and then I look them up, and they play the Rose Bowl. Well, after selling out 50 straight shows at the Rose Bowl...
Right.
Yeah. But you can also discover some really cool things, because they learn your profile and learn what you like, and then they suggest a new show. You're like, oh,
mine is very twisted now after watching Making a Murderer 2 and the Bundy. You know, here's what we think you'll like. Man.
All right, stay right there. Yes. We will come back. We'll talk about Conversations with a Killer, the Ted Bundy tapes on Netflix, which has stirred so much controversy, and live music today. It's a Thursday, but we're pretending it's a Friday. Just go with it. Boo Ray is here. An Americana artist of great renown. Do not miss this. He sounds great. But first, Kim Gordon, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Someone got the baby calls. A country singing, fade to black. That girl, she won't be coming back.
That's Boo Ray. Sea of Lights. That's the title track from the new album right there, Sea of Lights. And he'll be joining us from Studio G coming up after the bottom of the hour news with Kim Gordon. Get to hear what... The Boo Ray Live right here, and then you can go see him tonight live at Haymarket. That is at the corner of Randolph and Halsted in Chicago. Mm, it's an amazing restaurant and amazing music bar area in the back that is just, it's one of the best in town.
It is.
Like, you know, you see these people like enjoying themselves in a movie, right? And it's like, where do I go to see that? Yeah, like, you know, like an amazing artist playing, and it's, and there's
laid back atmosphere,
and
good food,
great date night. And you're like, where, that doesn't exist. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Right really there, does. Haymarket.
Cool.
All right. Richard Roper is here. The Ted Bundy limited series is raising hackles.
Yes, available on Netflix as we speak. And, you know, there's such a fascination. There always has been, but in particular, I think after Making a Murderer and some of the other series and podcasts that are out there, there's such a fascination. And, you know, Ted Bundy, look, I think there were made for TV movies about this guy 20 years ago. For people who don't know, he was this, law student, handsome, dashing young man who in the early 70s, starting in the Pacific Northwest, started abducting and murdering young women, almost all between the ages of like 16 or 17 and 22, 23, often college students, and continued to elude authorities. And first of all, I think the limited series does not glorify him in any way, shape, or form. one of the fascinating things is they have so many people who were part of either the investigation or his life back in the 70s, and they show footage of them, and they're here now talking in real time, including the journalist who had all these audio tapes of him interviewing Ted Bundy. This was after Bundy had been captured and was in prison. So you hear Bundy on audio all the time, and this guy came up with an ingenious thing. He couldn't get the guy, you know, as a lot of psychopaths, sociopaths are. Bundy kept maintaining that they got the wrong guy. And he finally started saying to him, almost like they did, remember O.J. Simpson did the book, If I Did It?
Yeah.
Where he talked about what he would have done. This guy said, well, you're a smart guy. You were a law student. How do you think the killer would have behaved? It had him start to talk about himself in the third person. He said, well, I would have taken my car here, and I would have changed the license plate, and I would have gotten a motel room. I mean, and then you hear it. It's really chilling. Bundy, I think, was connected to more than 30 murders. There may have been even more.
Right.
And one of the things I think you guys will find fascinating, Rowan Ann, and I think the listeners will as well, and Kim will as well, is the difference in evidence gathering and news gathering in the 70s. You see all this amazing footage of the news organizations where they have to set up, you know, their remotes where it takes five people to do it. But also, the law enforcement agencies had no way of sharing anything with each other. There was no such thing really as a database, not even a fax machine. So this guy, while he was on the loose in the Pacific Northwest, one former cop says he was like a regional killer. No one knew about him. And then he went to Utah and Colorado, but the people in Utah and Colorado didn't know really about the series of killings in Washington, and they didn't even know what a serial killer really was. And eventually, as people might know, made his way down to Florida by way of Chicago and then Michigan, getting on various planes and trains because you could, you know, driver's licenses were pieces of paper. Mm-hmm. So even when his photo was on there, it's like back in the old days, it was in the post office.
Right.
When he was on the 10 most wanted list, when they finally figured out that this guy might be a serial killer, he also escaped from prison twice, which is insane. And they described that. And in one case, he was in custody, I think in Colorado. They knew almost for sure he had tried to abduct a young woman who actually got away, and she identified him. And she is in this documentary now, 40 years later, talking about that. And the jail cell he was in, above his jail cell, were living quarters for deputy sheriffs and guards, apartments. So he figured out when a guard wasn't home and went right through the ceiling. The ceiling was just a normal ceiling. There was no protection whatsoever. And he then went into the detective's, deputy's apartment, changed clothes, and walked out the front door.
Went on
to kill another dozen people. Wow. So, you know, those are the types of things. If you think you know the story of Ted Bundy, this documentary takes you deep into the story, and it's fascinating. I really don't think in any way, shape, or form it glorifies it. I mean, I know there's people talking about the Zac Efron movie coming out that's going to be about him. We'll see what happens with that. But this, it shows you who the real heroes are and the incompetence that really will have your blood boiling that led to this guy getting out twice and committing more crimes.
Right. Interesting.
It's a great, great limited series.
All right.
So, Netflix is warning people not to watch it alone.
I will say this, and you know, I've seen everything. I watched it, you know, deep into one night, and I did have to watch something else. You didn't want to go to bed with that on your mind. It's really that disturbing.
Because there are people like that out there. There's still, you know, there are active serial killers in America. And one of the things about Ted Bundy is that Ted Bundy hid behind his good-lookingness. Mm-hmm. Right, he was a charming guy, he was a good looking guy, and people were like, well, he can't be a criminal,
exactly.
Right. Law school student,
so he would, you know, find various ways to approach people. And if he said, you know, he put a cast on his arm, so he'd go up to a young, oh, I can't, you know, I need help loading something into a car, which, by the way, is a scene in Silence of the Lambs.
I was going to say, that sounds familiar.
He defended himself. You know, he's another one of those idiots, narcissists who thinks he can defend himself in a court of law, and there's footage of that too.
I didn't need a lawyer. I would say, though, it didn't work out so well for him.
No. And, yeah, for the spoiler alert, he got the death penalty and was electrocuted in Florida. As crowds of more than 1,000 turned out to cheer, which is also very chilling and strange to watch as well.
Yeah, that's true. I remember that night. I remember I had already started working when they did that. It was a big Nightline night and everything. It was a
huge night.
It was so strange, though, because, you know, the electric chair is, you know, they've since kind of done away with it, but it was a very gruesome way to execute. Now, he's one of the last guys, I think, died in the electric chair.
I believe you're correct,
So, crazy, 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 you know, but, well, few people have ever deserved it like he has, I think. Man. You know, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
All right, so the Ted Bundy, it's called The Conversations with a Killer. Ted Bundy tapes on Netflix.
Next week, I promise you, we'll have more. We will have more upbeat things. Lego Movie 2 is coming out next week,
oh,
at least. So,
I saw
for
one.
Those of you going, geez, Rich.
Is there the guy who fakes an injury in the Lego movie that we need to know about? Have you seen the Lego movie yet?
There is a celebrity cameo in there. You know?
Oh, very interesting.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
There's Notorious a Lego RBG?
RGB, and I'm only telling you this because it's in the trailer, but there really is. She's got her, and yes, it's available at fine stores and online right now.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg is the Bob Marley of the 21st century. Everybody's wearing a Ruth Bader. There's a documentary about her.
Oscar. Yeah.
They're you know, wearing T-shirts. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. I tell you, crazy. All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
How about some upbeat music we'll get?
Yes, I think that's what we're going to do. We're going to head right toward that. But right now, let's find out from, we already know from Kim, right? Did we know? Yes, we did find out from her already what's coming up. I'm really, you know what? I think.
Is it Friday?
I think, it's not Friday. It feels like Friday.
You need me to remind you?
And I think I froze something. I cannot. I can't think. My brain
is your brain
totally sideways right now.
Geez.
Kim Gordon's news coming your way in 2 minutes. You ready for some outlaw?
I am.
Outlaw country. All right, redneck rock and roll. That's the name of that song from Sea of Lights. It's Boo Ray, and Boo Ray is in. I know. I'm sitting here. We're playing a CD. Mm-hmm. Why are we playing a CD
when they're here?
When they're sitting right here. And first of all, why are we playing a CD when what we actually have here is
the best sounding studio in America.
And now there's just digital downloads. I don't even know why I have a CD. I got no idea. All right, Boo Ray is with us, and Boo is gonna be. He's leaving straight from here. I got a little, got myself a little reverb here now. It's very exciting. Nice. Boo is leaving right out of here, and he's heading over to Haymarket for the Haymarket Americana series, mm-hmm. along with Nikki Morgan, who is an amazing artist in her own right. And this is going to be a night of music you're not going to want to miss. They'll be talking about this for 100 years, perhaps. I'm not quite sure. Boo, are you ready to blow the doors off this?
Let's do it, man. Hell, I'm a little daunted now that I realize people are going to be rapping about this for 100 years.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. There are moments. There are certain concerts. You know, there was Elvis in Hawaii. There was Sinatra and 57th Street.
Chantal and Boo in Chicago.
Yeah,
right, I guess.
No pressure.
People will be talking about, where are you from originally?
Western North Carolina.
Oh, man.
Colorway, up in the mountains.
Yeah.
You know that movie, Deliverance?
What a beautiful part of the world, though. Smoky Mountains. If you have not been, if you've not seen the Smoky Mountains, I think they're the prettiest mountains in
Fantastic.
All of America.
It was wonderful until I got a driver's license. Then I was like, get me off this mountain.
Yeah. Oh, I totally understand it. But
so I ran down to Athens, Georgia.
Yeah. So what was your, who your influences?
Not long after I ran down to Athens, Georgia the first time, I got that Tom Dowd sound of him recording Marshall Tucker and, of course, Allman Brothers and 38 Special and Atlanta Rhythm Section. That Georgia sound totally bit me.
Yeah, Black Crows, right?
Yeah,
Georgia too.
Ricky Keller did the Black Crows at Southern Living at his finest studio, which Edwin McCain and Sean Mullins and the Black Crows, like you said, yeah.
Yeah, amazing stuff. That is really, that's one of those great fonts of music right there, Athens, Georgia, no question about it. Well, let's play some music. Why am I sitting here talking to you when we should be playing some music? What do you want to play for us?
Are we going to do one? Let's do one. We're going to play the lead-off track off this new record we got called, it's coming out February 15th. It's called Tennessee, Alabama Fireworks. And some of y'all know what that is. It was the Tennessee, Alabama Fireworks was the fireworks superstore between Chattanooga and Nashville.
There we go. Take it away.
Here's a tune you can whistle. Oh, pardon me. Here's Gone Back Down to Georgia. 1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you. in Whiteside Cove. Can't fix the love I broke, let it go. Take me down to Charleston Battery, way up on Oahu Creek. Nothing suits my soul like low country. I lost the love again. Should've never gone back down to Georgia. She ain't a damn thing. If that girl ain't drop dead gorgeous, I lost the love again. Should've never gone back down to Georgia. She ain't a damn thing. If that girl ain't drop dead gorgeous, should've never gone back down to Georgia. The things she done, I can't believe. Everybody knew she meant the world to me. Sometimes it seems just like my prayers don't get past the ceiling. I reckon somehow I'm to blame for how I'm feeling. I lost that love again. Should've never gone back down to Georgia. She ain't a damn thing. If that girl ain't drop dead gorgeous, I lost that love again. Should've never gone back down to Georgia. She ain't a damn thing. If that girl ain't drop dead gorgeous, should've never gone back down to Georgia. But she not drop dead gorgeous. Should've never gone back down to Georgia. She ain't a damn thing. If that girl ain't drop dead gorgeous, I lost her love again. Should've never gone back down to Georgia. She ain't a damn thing. If that girl ain't drop dead gorgeous, should've never gone back down to Georgia. A cheating heart, drop dead gorgeous, should've never gone back down to Georgia. She ain't a damn thing. If that girl ain't drop dead gorgeous, I lost her love again. Should've never gone back down to Georgia. She ain't a damn thing. If that girl ain't drop dead gorgeous, should've never gone back down to Georgia. A cheating heart, drop dead gorgeous, should've never gone back down to Georgia.
There you go.
Wow.
Boo Ray. Mm. That is from the new record, Tennessee, Alabama, Fireworks, and that's coming out, what'd you say, Tuesday?
February 15th.
February 15th.
Day after Valentine's Day.
Oh,
it's a breakup record.
Perfect.
Well, that's true. Now, I just want to know, was that autobiographical?
It was.
Yeah.
Yep.
And she was drop dead gorgeous, wasn't she?
Yep.
Yeah.
She's a roller derby girl.
Oh, yeah. And why? And why?
What happened there?
Yeah.
Entertainment business is tough on romantic relationship.
Oh. I'd never heard that.
Mm. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
that and you know, I mean, all of it. It's a tricky territory out there. In between digital distraction, I mean, I think as humanoids, we are experience more fear and we're overstimulated and given so much misinformation these days. My gosh, it's truly staggering and overwhelming on a regular basis.
Yeah. That is an excellent point that you're making. And in a way, and so you really shouldn't have gone back down to Georgia? Is that what I'm really getting at? Because you're going to have to go back to Georgia at some point.
The sweet melody suggests otherwise, maybe. You know?
That's right. Exactly right. There's a wistfulness here. That's an amazing, amazing, amazing song right
there. Thank you kindly. I appreciate that.
All right. We're going to come back. We're going to play more. The new record, like I said, February 15th, Tennessee, Alabama Fireworks. People also might want to check out Sea of Lights, album before that. Before, you know, that's the one that's currently out, right?
Yeah, that's right. That record I recorded with the same producer, Noah Shane, longtime great buddy, L.A. rock producer. He did Dead Sarah and Nico Vega. he called me and said, "Hey, Boo, I just acquired the Ampex tape machine that recorded Bob Dylan's Nashville Skyline. Let's make a record."
Oh, my God.
And so we made Sea of Lights.
On that same machine?
You sure did.
Wow. Well, it's an interesting thing because there's kind of a movement back to trying to go to analog, right? Because there's less compression in the analog.
It's more organic. You know, I work with this vinyl company also. We partner on all my vinyl releases, and it's a different world. We're not just pressing material that we come up with to vinyl. We're engineering on the front end for this stuff to be manufactured and listened to on vinyl. Right. It gets recorded down on to 2-inch tape and then mixed down to 1/4-inch tape on the quote unquote Muscle Shoals Stax machine, the little 1/4-inch tape machine.
Wow, that's great. It's actually for geeks. Most people did not understand a word of what you just said, but I will say this, for music geeks or for audiophiles,
right,
there's a whole world of that because the final experience is, set, depending on how good your ear is said to be completely different because the digital stuff, whether it's a download or a CD or whatever, it kind of clips the top and the bottom of everything.
Right.
And this allows the ambience of the room to fill out. That's the theory behind it. But you got to have the right equipment for it, and your music is amazing. And the guitar work is spectacular, Boo.
Thank you kindly, man. I'm lucky to play with some sharp cats. I introduce my right-hand man, Nick Champagne, Poe picking with me tonight. I'm tickled to be picking with Nick. We're covering some new ground. I can't wait to play down at Haymarket tonight. I'm crazy about the venue. This is my first time in Chicago as a working songwriter, as a working troubadour. I'm so excited. I'm blown away. I love your skyline. I've already geeked out and taken all my selfie pictures and with the Chicago in the background. I'm completely enamored.
Did you go down to see the lake on fire yet? Because there was smoke coming off the lake because it was so cold.
Beautiful.
Here.
Have you ever been this cold before, Boo?
No, it's you guys got the market cornered on that deal.
Yes, we do. But it's going to be 52 on Monday. So
stick around. So we'd love to have you.
We want that global warming to kick back in right now.
Yeah.
All right, Boo Ray is this artist, and he's got a new album coming out called Tennessee Alabama Fireworks. It's coming out in 2 weeks, and we have right now Kim Gore. We have David Jennings going to tell us what's coming up in the newsroom at the top of the hour. Then more music from Boo Ray. All right. We're back, and I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm going to do it anyway. Let me tell you first, because we get back to Boo Ray, live music Friday on a Thursday. Don't ask. There's a whole reason for it. And Boo is going to be at, to my ear, one of the best music halls in America, the Haymarket.
Mm.
It's in Chicago. It's on Randolph. It's at the corner of Randolph and Halsted. You go through the restaurant to the back. There's a separate entrance also for the music as well. If you want to go back, it's in the back with a bar. And it's the Americana series is amazing. And he's going to be there. It's not just Boo. It's not my Boo. It's Nicky Morgan's going to be with him, and he's got an amazing guitarist, Nick Champagne, with him as well. Let me just remind you this before we get back to the music. MB Financial Bank wants to send you and a guest to a Blackhawks game. This package includes a tour of the United Center, a ride on the ice during intermission, and 2 tickets to the game on February 14th when the Hawks take on the Devils. It's your last chance. The contest ends tonight at 11:59 p.m. Go to WGNRadio.com/contest. Enter to win. Bank on the Blackhawks, sponsored by MB Financial. MB means business. All right, Boo. I want you to take it away here. What do you want to play for us?
Let's do another tune off the new record.
And the new record, of course, is called Tennessee Alabama Fireworks.
And we'll do this tune. It's called A Tune You Can Whistle, and this is where the this song has the lyric where we grabbed the album title from.
All right.
Nice.
All right, here we go.
Let's go, man.
1, 2, 3, 4. We're hacking at it now. We got a very frayed connection. Better hook your heart up to your mouth. One day
vacation under the influence of a cell phone computer screen. One nation under the influence of a benzodiazepine. A new car speeding round the bypass. Anxiety's at the wheel. A new car going nowhere real fast. Ain't nobody's at the wheel. Ain't nobody's at the wheel. Ain't nobody's at the wheel. I got a tune you can whistle, a motor and a pistol. When life gets tough like a mouthful of gristle, I'm a rabbit in the moon, I'm a bobcat slaying coon. Lucky seven takes a dollar, I'm a pick and sing and holler. Breaker, breaker, anybody got your ears on? I'm out here hunting songs. Breaker, breaker, anybody got your ears on? I'm a rolling all night long. Breaker, breaker, anybody got your ears on? I sure could use a friend. Breaker, breaker, anybody got your ears on? Try you next time I get back this way again. I got a tune you can whistle, a mortar and a pistol. When life gets tough like a mouthful of gristle, I'm a rabbit in the moon, I'm a bobcat slaying coon. Lucky seven takes a dollar, I'm a pick and sing and holler. Seven takes a dollar, I'm a pick and sing and holler. Wasn't worse than the pain of the change. There's not a single damn thing, it'd be different, I'd still be the same. I'm a rabbit in the moon, I'm a bobcat slaying coon. Lucky seven takes a dollar, I'm a pick and sing and holler. I'm a rabbit in the moon, I'm a bobcat slaying coon. Lucky seven takes a dollar, I'm a pick and sing and holler. Seven takes a dollar, I'm a pick and sing and holler. Lucky seven takes a dollar, I'm a pick and sing and holler.
Tennessee right. Album Fireworks is that that record. Go on the where all fine music is sold on the internet, and find that. A Tune You Can Whistle is that's the first track right on that record.
That's it.
And get the whole collection too. Get Sea of Lights because it's a great record too. It's a great album.
Thanks, man.
So and you can see Boo Ray tonight with Nick Shampo as his accompaniment, along with Nicky Morgan. And Nicky Morgan will your jaw will drop open when you
She'll
hear Nicky
blow
Morgan
you away.
Too.
We've heard about her about Nicky all the way in Nashville.
Yeah, she's amazing. Go see them tonight. It's at Haymarket Americana Series at the Haymarket. It's at Randolph and Halsted in Chicago. You will thank me.